Welcome back to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. 3 years ago, on our very first show, we wanted to know when clean energy was actually going to get here, in a big enough way that pulling into the gas station might become a thing of the past. At the time, we went to chemist Dan Nocera, a world leader in researching clean energy, who tells you exactly where we're succeeding and failing. Dan Nocera from Harvard, we've got you back on the show today to tell us where things stand. Thanks for coming in again.
Oh, thanks for having me again.
So you've been working on a way of harnessing energy from the sun, the artificial leaf. But the way I understand it currently is that you can plaster your house in solar panels, but there's no way to store that energy that the panels are soaking up all day long.
Yep. You can use the energy during the day right away from the solar panels.
Okay, to heat your water or...
And give you electricity in your walls. But you'll actually generate more than you need often. And then what you'll do is sometimes you have what's called metering. You sell it back to the power company. They just don't know what to do with it.
And recently, the defense contractor Lockheed Martin bought this company that you started, Sun Catalytics, which makes a battery that can store energy in an efficient way, which to me is interesting because defense is kind of a part of the government that's really aggressive when it comes to dealing with climate change and pioneering new technology for renewable energy.
Yeah. Usually, you know, the Defense Department is, believe it or not, the most visionary because they have some of the biggest challenges. So they'll take the bigger risk.
The internet, right? Yep. We wouldn't have the internet if it weren't for...
That's right.
Yeah.
But I think that there's something bigger here. As you know, I'm in the public eye a lot. I give a lot of public lectures. And there's always these conspiracy theories. The oil companies are going to stop you or they're going to suppress new technology. That's not how it will work. What's going to happen is you're going to see a transitioning. It's not Dan Nocera against oil companies. It's other huge companies who are saying we historically haven't been in energy, but our growth market's going to be energy. And it's going to be those companies that then start driving this new world, which will then compete with the oil companies, the old way of doing things. And I think, you know, I wasn't in the boardroom of Lockheed Martin and all these decisions, but I'm pretty sure that's what they're looking at as a growth area for their company. They may even have contracts now with the military that could use this. But I think they're thinking in a much more global way of them transitioning and also becoming an energy company.
Okay, so let me take a step back and jump in with the conspiracy theorist because it does feel to me, and I think it's going to feel to a lot of people, like for 5, 10, 15, 20 more years, people have talked about renewable energy, that cars were going to become a lot more efficient, that we were going to transition away from oil. But I guess I wonder, what has been so slow? I mean, you know, we've sort of always been on the precipice, but we've never really crossed over to that other side.
The problem has been, when you look at coal, oil, and gas, they're very cheap. Everything we list on a piece of paper will look more expensive than coal, oil, and gas. And the reason for that, it has nothing to do with the oil companies. They are just using an existing infrastructure that's been paid off. You, as a society, paid off your energy system. You paid off the railroads. You've paid off the plants. You paid everything off. So you're literally only paying for this stuff. Once we get to renewable energy, you're not just paying for the stuff, the sunlight and the solar panel. You have to also pay for building an entire new infrastructure. So that's really the challenge. And then I'll turn and put the finger back on me. As a scientist, I have to realize it's all about cost and wake up in the morning and then say, what do I invent? What do my students invent that make it cost competitive?
What has been the effect of fracking on I mean, we have seen moments, for sure, where gas was $4 a gallon, where the cost of gas made people hurt enough that I think, you know, renewables got this entrance into the conversation where they could say, oh, guess what? We've got something, too. Fracking, though, has been this new energy source, and people say the U.S. is like the Saudi Arabia of natural gas.
So fracking's really changed the equation in good ways and bad ways. If you go to California now, they're closing down all their coal-fired power plants because they're using gas turbines. And natural gas still makes CO2. You can't avoid that when you have a carbon-based fuel, but it makes half the amount of CO2 coal does. And so fracking has contributed in a positive way to the CO2 balance. There's concerns environmentally about fracking. They're still out there. They're not resolved, and there's a lot of controversy. You also have to realize a little bit of methane leaking into the atmosphere is a lot worse than having CO2.
It does a lot of damage.
A lot of damage. And so, you know, these, I don't want to get into personal views. I think there has to be a lot more regulation in that industry, personally. But here's another thing fracking's done. Put a total wet blanket on innovation. All the money, investing money, is going into fracking because it's the easiest way to make new money off of energy. And it's really suppressed innovation. I've seen that in the last 3 years. It's been unbelievable how the dollars have dried up from investors for new renewable technologies, and they're all shifting to a whole bunch of fracking.
Dan Nocera from Harvard, does that mean that you had, you know, little companies with promising technology shut their doors?
Yes.
Because they said there's no way we can compete?
You can look in Forbes. It was kind of humorous. Forbes published an article listing all the MIT companies that have failed in energy. But that article really is pointing to the problem is there's lots of little companies with lots of amazing stuff, and there's just no investing dollars.
You know, I want to ask you about two players here. One is the government, one is us. Let me start with the government. What is the role, or is there any, of the government here? I mean, should the government be helping those little companies? Obviously, we've seen people criticize the government for helping a company, and then its technology turns out to be not so great. You know, we see different models around the world. Obviously, in Germany, many, many, many buildings have solar panels on their roofs because the government subsidized them. Should the government be a player here? Can they be? Are they smart enough to be?
Government can play a role initially as a catalyst, but it's wrong to look at them long term. They don't have enough money to support it. It really has to be the market. Now, the government could have a major, major role in getting things going if they were to price carbon. If they were to price carbon, and I'm going to use the word price, other people will use the word tax, and that's
right.
Why it's just not going to happen in the U.S.,
That
would get things going. However, the technology has to then step up to the plate quickly and get to a market, because without a competitive market driving it, it's going to die. And even Germany has seen that. They spent a lot of money to get things going, but it's been unsustainable for the government to maintain that over a long period of time.
Do they price carbon? Or
tax in a way, they price carbon. It's called cap and trade, yeah. And so they were very proactive, but you know, you can think of it like two lines, and the government can get things going, but that's a slower slope. The technology line has to be much steeper. So once it gets going, that finally the technology becomes so attractive to in the market that it gets privatized and people can make money off of it.
Let me ask about the us component of this. People can be very reluctant to change. What role do we, the consumer, play in trying to get renewable energies to market? Or, I mean, are we an impediment to any sort of change? We have an infrastructure and it works pretty well. And we drive around and, you know, fill up our cars and turn on our lights. And, you know, it's working out for most people.
Yeah, I'm going to be a little tough on us.
That's
now.
Fine.
Okay.
We can take it.
We do things like Band-Aids to make ourselves feel good. Maybe you get in a battery-powered car and you feel good, but you're not really changing anything. I will say you have to start locally. I'm a total believer, so you should keep doing that, because once it's local, it starts to change that lifestyle, and you actually have to make yourself a believer first.
Wait. So does owning a Prius do something or do nothing?
I think it does something psychologically. But we're at a bigger issue, and it's our political system, and it's a will and a commitment to change this energy infrastructure. And we aren't there. You can look in Congress, you can look in the Hill, look at all the fighting and all the bickering about this. We really don't want to change it. And, you know, it's a complicated thing. I watch people say, divest from oil. So you'll say it to places like, say, Harvard or MIT. But point in fact, look at your own personal finances and in your 401ks, are you divesting there? So it's a kind of funny thing. We like to do a little local thing and then point our finger at everybody else, including big oil or big energy. And we haven't, as a society, committed. I really do think you can elect people who believe in change in the energy. We don't do that.
Are there countries where people are more committed? I mean, it seems to me America is more divided on this issue than many places.
At the end of the day, Australia, for instance, they did price carbon a few years ago. That's all now sort of getting frittered away. So people have tried. Again, it's just the hard reality. You have to have an energy technology that is cost competitive in a market with coal, oil, and gas. And that is a hard, hard thing. It's slowly happening. Like, here are all the good things. Silicon prices have come down. In many parts of the world now, silicon is competitive, meaning renewable solar energy is competitive with coal, oil, and gas.
Although as demand for solar panels ramps up and everybody wants them on their roofs, is that going to remain the same with silicon, or is that going to drive prices up and all of a sudden it won't be competitive?
It could drive
anymore.
Prices up, but then that will get an infrastructure in place. And with that infrastructure and inventions like Sun Catalytics just had with the flow battery, that's all going to drive this change over to a cost competitive world.
In the world of renewable energy, solar gets talked about, but wind gets talked about too. There have been wind turbines put up all over the middle of the country, which is very windy. A lot of in Texas, a lot sort of in the Kansas, Iowa stretch there. Is it solar that is the real answer? That's what you work on? Or is wind a major component of this?
They're the same thing for me. So okay. Same deal. If you have a power, so you know what happens? That big wind farms in the Midwest, they dump the energy when it's super windy. They don't know what to do with it.
So they just throw it away?
They just throw it away at site.
Well, what's the point of having a wind farm?
They use it when it's very windy and they're making so much energy, they don't have any place to put it in the grid. So now we're going to get back to the same issue, storage. See, if the power companies had storage, they don't care if that's coming in from a windmill or a solar panel. So this storage issue, when I think of wind and solar, physically they're different things, when the wind blows, when the sun blows. But from a market point of view, doesn't matter. Once you have storage, they'll take wind, they'll take solar.
So, Dan Nocera, when you come in for the 10th anniversary of Innovation Hub, are we going to be anywhere different than we are now than we were, you know, when you came on the very, very first show that we had?
Yeah, I have no doubts about it. We're moving in the right direction and things are getting better. It's just how quickly. And for me, it's not quick enough. But in the last 3 years, since I was here, the artificial leaf as a science has done really wonderfully, more than met my expectations. And with two of my friends, professors at the University of Chicago and at Harvard economists, I'm more on the sidelines cheering right now, but we're monitoring 1,000 power plants in India for particulate emission. That will go to 10,000 plants. And with that data, the Indian government is instituting a cap and trade system to allow renewables to go into India. China's now talking to us.
So the developing world is on this.
I really think they are. And I think they're, as I've always said, the hope for us, because they will be the earlier and quicker adopters. But everything's pointing in the right direction. It's just the will. And what you said is right. We live a pretty comfortable life with energy, and we really don't want to change it that quickly.
Dan Nocera is a professor of energy at Harvard. He was on the first show. He's on our anniversary show. Thanks very much for coming in.
Well, thanks for having me. And the world.